This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We altered your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenant radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Ben? Can you feel it?
I feel it. I feel it, Chandler.
Feeling the power of the fiends.
Yeah.
So what's up, brother? Where are you now? You hiding? Are you safe?
I am. I'm floating around in the south, going from campground to campground, just enjoying life and avoiding the government whenever possible.
Me too, man.
I was listening to your show the other day with you and MK, and you guys did a really good job. I really enjoyed that show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's nice to get to do shows with different fiend hosts. You know, for a while there, I was doing a lot of Mondays with Derek, and I love Derek. He's great. Him and I, we have this like weird unspoken thing. We can kind of riff off each other really good, but it's really cool to be able to connect with new people and experiment and do shows like that. You never know what to expect, you know?
Yeah. Oh, we're supposed to read the...
Oh, yeah.
You want to take that one?
Yeah. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Cool.
Yeah, we're using Fiend Phone. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty. We had a hard time connecting to each other, probably because of me, because, you know, the 12 different computers I have running probably all conflict with each other. But
we have an I called up Derek. To most people. Yeah, that's what I started to say. We have Derek. Yeah. If you have Derek in your pocket, you have an advantage over everybody.
Yeah, man, that guy's brilliant.
He really is. You know, he really is genius level. If you talk to him a little bit, you can really see it there.
Well, you know, it's funny. The first year I went to Porkfest, I was, I think I've told it before, him and his wife, Donna, they graciously let me pitch my little tent on their site. They get this awesome double site every year. And I remember one morning we were recovering from the previous evening, and we were sitting around the campfire. You know, I made breakfast, and we were all yakking. And you guys know I'm a tech guy. I love computers, right? And Derek was sitting there, and his friend Ben was there, really cool guy. Yeah, and yeah. We were talking about computers and programming and components, and I got to tell you, I felt like a complete moron talking with these guys. I mean, they were like way over my head, you know. But it's cool because you get to learn. You know, I try to pay attention when smart people talk, so I can pick up a few things here and there.
You know that I know you know this, but for our listeners, they took an old ambulance, and not that old, you know, a modern style of ambulance, but it was a used ambulance, and they sort of converted into a mobile internet studio thing, sort of thing. And it is
super cool. Awesome.
It is.
Yeah. I remember last year, the first night I got there, I ran into Derek, and he's like, or no, I ran into Donna, and she's like, "Have you seen the ambulance yet?" And I'm like, "No, I kind of hope I don't. I'm feeling okay." And she's like, No. We got an ambulance." And she didn't tell me what it was. And I'm like, "Okay, well, that's good to be prepared, you know." And and finally, I made my way down to the what's that alley called?
Oh yeah, Agora Valley.
Agora Valley. Yeah. And I made my way down, and I seen this ambulance, and Derek was sitting there. And I think, I can't remember the guy's name. I think it was RJ Rev or Radio, Rebel Radio or something. I'm sorry, guys. I can't remember. It was a foggy night. But they were there doing a live show, and Derek's like, "Dude, check out the ambulance." And he brought me in, showed me like the 12 different monitors and the computers and the Wi-Fi setup. And I was just like, Oh, this is so cool.
It is.
This is like nerd heaven, man.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was, you know, I've been, we have this motorhome, and I was showing, after Derek showed me their ambulance, I gave him the grand tour of the motorhome and everything, and the guy's mind is, you can just see the gears just going like crazy in there. He starts looking at things, he's like, you know, you got a lot of dead space in here, this could go in here, and you could do this over here, and, you know, I mean, and it's true, this motorhome has so much wasted space, because they run these things through an assembly line, you know, wherever they're built at. And they use the fastest, and this is a high quality motorhome. It's not a cheap thing, you know. It's very expensive. But even though it is,
dude, expensive, your motorhome is nicer than my house.
It is very nice, and we're very proud of it. You know, we worked hard for the money to buy it and everything. But there is a lot of dead spaces where they, you know, there's no motivation in the competition in selling motorhomes to really go through and utilize space, like, you know, like in the 50s and the 60s, trailers, camp trailers, were these tiny little pull behind things, and everything in them was really unique, and it was like, like things folded out of here and folded out of there, and something slid out of here and slid, and there was little compartments all over the place. Well, nowadays, when you have a motorhome that's like 30, 34, 36, 38 feet long, and it's like whatever the maximum width that a vehicle can be and still be on, you know, U.S. highways, all of that miniaturization just goes out the window, and they start putting in big stuff, and they don't care about space anymore. And it's really a shame.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, and this is maybe in a direction that we probably shouldn't elaborate on too much, but if I owned one of these things and I had the mind of a smuggler and I wanted to be in that kind of an industry, you could pretty much hide people in a thing like this in the space that they don't use. And
yeah, it could turn it into the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Be like Han Solo.
You really could. There is just so many places. And there's places that even, you know, when you remember the guys with the Motorhome Diaries that toured everywhere? Did you see those?
I vaguely remember it a little bit.
Well, they were in, I think, Mississippi, if I recall. It could have been, I could be off on one state on there. But they were somewhere in the South, and they were going through, and cops pulled them over for some crazy excuse, pulled them all out, ripped the motorhome just from one end to the other, searching it, trying to find something illegal that they could charge these guys with. And, of course, they found nothing. They found like alcohol in the refrigerator. Wow. Oh, you got us. You got beer in the refrigerator. Wow. You know, and I think that was probably the biggest charges against them, was that they had beer in the refrigerator. And eventually everything was dropped. But in the process, the cops like went through this motorhome like a tornado. And still, you go back and look at the YouTube of that search, of the results of that search. And it's clear from that, living in a motorhome and knowing what these things are like, I'm looking around going, yeah, all they do is open every cabinet, open every door, open every drawer, and pull out the contents and dump them on the floor. But that is nothing compared to the amount of spaces that can be gotten to with a screwdriver and like 5 minutes in this thing. I mean, they're everywhere, from literally from, you know, wheel level all the way up. There's just all kinds of voids that could easily be filled.
So you could do like the guy in Meet the Fockers and have like the little computer command center underneath the floor of the RV.
Yeah, you pretty much could.
That's awesome. Okay, so I wanted, you know, it's funny because I bought this house 2 years ago, and I love it, and it's really cool having your own home, but I'm already ready to like start traveling and have an RV. Like, my kid's 16, and she swears up and down the day she turns 18, and it's not because we have a bad relationship. We have a really good relationship, but she's very independent. When she turns 18, she's moving out, which, okay, cool. We'll see how that goes. But I kind of want to travel now. I'm thinking, geez, it'd be nice to have a motorhome. And now I really want to have like a decked out cool one.
You know, if you know the tricks, and it's not that complicated, really. If you don't have payments on the motorhome, that's one major thing. And if you know some of the basic tricks and some of the things that is real commonly known among RVers, you can live super cheap on the road like this. You know, if you compare, like if you pull into just a regular campground, with no membership or anything like that. You're going to pay anywhere from like maybe on the low end, like $20 a night, up on the high end of about $80 a night, just to park your motorhome in there. But
wow.
If you know the tricks, and if you have a couple memberships, which can only be like we've got one camping membership that's like $200 a year, another membership that's like $300 a year. And with those, we can travel from campground to campground and have zero or close to it, cost per night to stay. Some of them might charge you $5 a night to stay. And that includes all your utilities. And so if you can use your brain a little bit on how to cook food without using propane, so that you're using mostly electric to heat your RV and mostly electric to cook your food with, your propane use drops down close to zero. And so your electricity is free. So, I mean, like I have tried to talk to a couple of people about what does it take to mine Bitcoin? And the answer is always, it costs more electricity now than what it's worth. But I have free electricity. I have so much free electricity that I could afford to run an air conditioner just to cool computers that are also running for free. But I'm not bright enough with tech stuff to know how to do all this stuff. But, all the potential is there. But that's just, I got off on a sidetrack there. But if you understand how to do this RVing and everything, you can live so cheap. You can get monthly, like in a high-quality RV resort right next to the ocean with great view and a bunch of your things supplied, like electricity and stuff. And you may only be paying $200 to $300 a month if you're not in a membership. If you go, if you go 6 months at a time or something, it's really cheap to live like this. And a lot of local food that you can get a hold of that's either like all natural, that's grown locally, or, there's just a lot of opportunities. And especially if you go, the more cash you go, the more likely you are to get a really, really good price with places. Ah, what's that sound I hear?
I think it's time to go to the market.
Yeah. And when we get back, I'll talk about something that's not RV related.
Oh, I don't know, man. I love that culture. That's pretty cool.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Meow. Worms, 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 worms.
Lou always says, cock-a-doodle-doo.
That cracks chop, me up. Chop, rooster.
Yeah, that cracks me up when he does that. Hey, folks, we're back with the Freedom Fiends, back from the market.
So before we left, you were talking about the joys and wonders of living a nomadic mobile RV lifestyle.
Oh, I love it.
And I was curious. Yeah, I was curious. Like, I've often said I think I was born in the wrong decade. And I wonder, how much more difficult is it to just travel and live nomadically than it was, let's say, 25, 30 years ago?
You know, other than interruptions of police bothering you and things like that, I think it's pretty easy now. If not the same, it's pretty close to the same as it was 20, 30. It's one of the few things that the ever-expanding government hasn't really fouled up yet. It's surprisingly, well, first off, I don't know how to put this politically correct, but police typically do not, go after RVers on the highway, especially the nicer RVers, because they tend to be older and retired and have attorneys on staff and really, you know, it's not their and their voter base, you know. So those people have a lot of older people have a lot of power with all these different like, you know, AARP and all the different organizations that they belong to. And so, you know,
I read that that was the most powerful lobby in Congress.
I've read that too. Yeah. So that has a big impact on cops having a tendency to leave you alone if you're in an RV. They tend to. That's not a guarantee. And some RVers, there's even a book, I can't remember the name of it, but it's about traveling up and down Highway 75 and where to get off of Highway 75 and drive around the speed traps, where the speed traps are. Where exits are, where you just don't want to get off and get gas. You don't want to get off there and go to a restaurant or a hotel or whatever. You want to go two more exits down and go to that one. I mean, it's a really good book. I don't have it. I've only read reviews of it online and looked at it and you know, snippets of it and stuff. But also above and beyond the nicety of being left alone mostly by cops on the interstates, it's really not that hard to go off the interstate and just use the back roads, and you can get all kinds of places. You know, it pretty much there's a standard. If there's a white line on the right side, you know, on the shoulder side of the highway, then that's pretty much a guarantee that big trucks can go on it. And if big trucks can go on it, RVs can go on it, you know, so you're not going to hit a wire overhead or trees or whatever. And going with that, man, you can go all over the place and just see all kinds of things.
Take the road less traveled, huh?
Yeah, I can't sell it enough. I mean, I said before the break I wouldn't keep talking about RVs, but it's like an old person, you know.
That sounds awesome.
You ask an old person about their condition, and they'll just ramble on for hours. But yeah. I love it. I really do.
It's appealing to me more and more. And, you know, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or whatever, but, you know, it's interesting you were talking about the notifying people of the different police presences and areas. I was driving work today, and for once, this story is not going to end with me getting pulled over. I swear to God. I had a new client today, so I drove a different route. I was going up Western Avenue in Augusta, where I live, and it's notorious for speed traps. There's three areas in the town where they have speed traps at the beginning or end of the month, and that's one of them. But we're not exactly in the beginning or the end of the month. We're actually dead set in the middle. Tax day. Yay. And for some reason, I just decided to drive slow. And thank God I did. Because those sneaky buggers, there was a unmarked Suburban hiding behind a business's sign, a big, you know, billboard business, with his little radar gun sticking out the window. And they were nabbing people left and right.
Wow.
So, you know, as soon as I pulled into the local Burger King or whatever to grab breakfast, and I posted on Facebook and everything, you know, hey, watch out if you're in Augusta or on Western Avenue, big speed trap there. The highwaymen are out there, you know, pulling people over and robbing them left and right. And I said, keep an eye out for the gray Suburban with the radar gun. So yeah. it's making their ridiculous collections. Yeah, you know, and they say they don't have quotas. Come on.
There's been too many cops that have retired or quit or been fired or whatever that have come out and said, no, when I was a cop, which was not that long ago, they always had quotas. But they didn't call it that. Maybe they didn't call it by that name, and that's how they get away with it, you know.
Oh. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Man, that time went by quick.
Yeah.
We're going to go away with the market. Oh, you said it.
We're gonna scoot around the police blockades and get to the free market.
Yeah.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. And I got to tell you, Ben, after dealing with computers for the last few hours, I think I'm ready to give it all up and just start RVing.
Yeah, they can be pretty frustrating.
But you know, it's funny, we were talking, like, there's some really fancy programs out there to accomplish the tasks you wish to accomplish that you'll pay, you know, $100, $200, $300 for. And there's some simpler ones that'll accomplish the same task that are free.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they work better.
Yeah. And, you know, something you mentioned too is so often with software, you find one that you really like and you start using it. And then all of a sudden there's an update and you're like, okay, well. Oh. And so you do the update and then it's never good again. You just always regret doing that update.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I've really been into the Mac thing lately, and I'm loving it, and I've upgraded my Mac, yada, yada, yada. But one of the things I've noticed with Apple that's really, really frustrating me is they've upgraded their operating systems in the last, 2 years, probably 4 times. I was on Snow Leopard for the longest time, and Snow Leopard is like XP. There's no more support for it. So I figured, well, you know, I should probably bite the bullet and upgrade. And it goes Lion, Mountain Lion, Mavericks, and then Yosemite. And I just went to Mountain Lion, and it runs really great. I like it. It's a little bit different than Snow Leopard, but I think it's got a lot of improvements. I'm pretty happy with it. But I've noticed that a lot of the applications out there for Mac, and it's not totally Apple's fault. I think it's a collaboration between the software developers and Apple. But they won't work on anything but the newest operating system. Wow. And the newest operating system is garbage. Like, I have this program, Final Cut Pro, and I've had Final Cut Pro 10 for a while, and you know, it first came out and it ran on Snow Leopard, and they updated it to, like, you know, 0.10.01 and 0.10.07 or whatever, and I think they're up to like 10.1.4. you can't run it on anything but the newest operating system, which is ridiculous because the program is not that old and neither is the operating system. That's one thing I'll say for Windows. You know, they have support for software on operating systems that are like 8 years old.
Yeah.
So I'll give Windows a little credit there. You know, they don't play that game quite as badly, which is good. So it's a little frustrating dealing with this. I've had to find the updated versions, and then I can't get the latest one because it doesn't run on my OS, and there's certain features that aren't in the ones that run on my OS, and it's just like, oh, gag me, you know?
Yeah.
Just make it simple.
You know, to a large degree, I think software, the big software companies are making the same mistake that automakers have made over the years. You know, if you go back and you look at the functions of a Model T, now, sure, okay, it rode horrible, really bad spring, no shocks, really bad springs, and, you know, early ones that had wooden spoke wheels, and it was just horrible, but it was super simple. It had an engine and a transmission and a rear end, rear differential, and you steered it and you gave it gas, and that was pretty much it. And then, you know, they started doing stuff to make it more comfortable and just more user-friendly and everything like this. And now it's to the point of where if you buy a new vehicle or you even just look at a new vehicle, they have so many little gadgets that are all over this thing that, you know, as soon as the warranty runs out, the mirror's going to fall off, and the outside mirrors are not going to be electronically controlled anymore, and they're not going to move the way they're supposed to, and the seats won't move right, and the handles of things start to break off and fall off, and it's just, you know, they're really making garbage. And it doesn't matter that it can play your Bluetooth this or your MP3 that, or it can tell you where to make a right turn and where to make a left turn. All that junk is going to break down right after the warranty fails on it.
Yeah, it's planned obsolescence. Have you ever seen the documentary, The Light Bulb Conspiracy?
No, I've heard a lot about it, and I keep intending on looking at it, but I haven't.
It's really good. I mean, it focuses on the light bulb manufacturers, and I'm just going to paraphrase the stats, but, you know, back when light bulbs were invented, you know, they were what was it, like 20 or 30, you know, milliwatt hours or however they rate it. It was much higher. And all the manufacturers got together and said, hey, we've got to lower the hour lifespan of our light bulbs, basically, so we can sell more. Mm-hmm. And they did. And I think you find that in a lot of products now. You know, I mean, they highlight in the documentary, they highlight the light bulb that's been on since, I think, like 1910. It's in a fire station in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it hasn't burnt out yet. And you're right. You see that with software and car makers a lot. They just, like, one of the ones that really gets me, I'm a big fan of Adobe products. Mm-hmm. I use, I love Photoshop and Audition are the two. And I like Premiere too. I'm pretty good with Premiere. And every year they've got to roll out a new version.
Yeah.
And sometimes they put in some cool new features. You know, the last big one a few years ago. They enabled 64-bit support, which meant better speeds and file handling capabilities. But they put in a lot of these little features. And the more of these little features they put in, like you said, the window falls off. You know, certain things don't work. The program creates conflicts and it'll crash. And it's just, it's such a headache. You know, people don't have time to, well, some of us don't have time. Some of us have plenty of time. But, you know, we don't have time to search Google for technical solutions to this obscure error or, you know, whatever. But they just do it because they've got to roll out a new product every year to keep those ever-increasing profit margins going.
Yeah, and, you know, let's not to get off on a totally side rant, but part of the one of the excuses that you always hear pro IP people say is that we have to have IP protection because if we didn't, people would rip off all of our software or all of our games or all of our this or all of our that. And yet, even though they have all that IP laws in place and everything like that, the manufacturer still can't make money selling the same product every year. And you can blame it on hackers, or you can blame it on people file sharing, or you can whatever. But the fact is that the excuse that you're using, that you can't make money selling the same product, you know, over and over and over, the reason you say you need IP for that is not valid because you go back and repeat, make the new product over and over every year anyway. So I don't know if I'm making sense with that.
No, you are. And all they're doing in a lot of cases is putting bloatware in there that you don't want, that you don't need, and slows down your computer.
Oh,
and they're calling it the new upgraded version.
I hate every time I see a Java update that's required. I just grit my teeth because I know it's going to want to give me a new default on my browser, and it's going to want to. And if you don't get all the right checks, you know, unchecked, then it's just
it's frustrating.
It is.
And there's a lot of security risks too. I mean, Flash Player for your browser is a classic example. How many exploits are found? I mean, Flash Player updates so much. And even I've noticed, I've always been a big fan of Firefox for a browser. And even they're updating constantly because I think they're rushing out their software and they're not thoroughly testing each version they put out, and there's exploits in it. And as a side note, did you see that Microsoft is finally retiring Internet Explorer? It will not be in the next version of Windows.
Oh, really?
Yep.
You know, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is a couple years ago, but there was an internet meme floating around that was the image of children representing the major browsers. You know, so there's one child is supposed to be Firefox, and one child is supposed to be Google Chrome. And then the third child that's representing Explorer, he's got, you know, a safety helmet on, and he's on a leash, and he's, you know, you can tell that he's not quite in the same league with the other two children. It was really a sad, rude thing to put out, but it was hilarious. You know, the internet
is
very
cruel. It's true, too.
It is, yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, I posted an article on Facebook last night from cracked.com, and I got to tell you, man, they are putting out some excellent, excellent articles. A lot of it is commentary, social commentary. and weird obscure facts. I alternate between the two, but they put out an article on how basically my generation and the generation under just a bunch of whiners, and they're just looking to be offended about everything. And how it's just transformed society. You know, you can't go anywhere without somebody complaining about being offended. And, you know, how do I make this radio friendly? what happened to the strong, silent type, you know, that just, oh, well, stuff happens and you deal with it. You know, yeah. you don't look for reasons to get all upset and worked up and offended about everything.
Yeah. You know, since we're talking about tech stuff, we had talked about before the show about maybe talking about that article about the somebody extorting a county in Maine for Bitcoin.
Lincoln County.
That we don't have enough time before the break to really go into it in depth, but we should tease for it at least. So the headline or the overview of the story is that the county somehow magically got this virus in their computer system, and it locked up pretty much all of the county's computers, their entire network, and it required an extortion of a Bitcoin to get the password to unlock the virus and let them back in. And this included like the sheriff's department and all their police files and everything. And so they paid the Bitcoin. They paid the bribery to get their, or the extortion to get their password to open back up their computers. And of course the FBI.
The cops were probably, cops were probably looking at porn sites and they got a virus on that. And, you know, opportunist hackers looked for it and said, hey, but you know, the question in my mind from this article that arises is, where did the cops get the Bitcoin? Because they don't strike me, you know, government types don't strike me as the type that have a lot of Bitcoin on hand.
They probably had to ask somebody's, you know, somebody's kid, somebody's teenage son or something. What are you going to say, Bitcoin?
Yeah. Will you mine this for us? Yeah. I'll let you know in a year when I get it.
Right.
Well, they had to buy it off somebody. Who knows?
So we're going to go away to the market again. But stick with us. We'll be right back.
When we come back, we'll make fun of the police.
Definitely.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow. Freedom Fiend.
Worming your way into your brain since 2011.
Yeah.
So Ben, you're pretty tech savvy, man. You were just telling me that you guys have never gotten a virus on your computer, which is good.
Yeah, never.
And you don't use virus software.
No, we have never. You know, I tried. I think it was like a free version of McAfee or something. And this was like mid-90s, late-90s, something like that. And I got so aggravated at that thing trying to kill it once it failed. You know, it started giving me a hard time. And it was like, you know, I'm ready to burn my computer to get this thing off. It's worse than a virus. And so I got rid of that, I never loaded any other virus protection software. I put a double firewall. This is on our home system. We had the cable internet coming in, and we had it going through I think it went through two routers.
It's a hardware firewall.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a firewall on each of those. And so it had to go through, if somebody was coming in forcibly, they would have to break through two hardware firewalls with, you know, passwords and everything before they could get to any of our computers. And we ran with that as long as we were at home. Now that we're on the road, again, we have no software antivirus ware at all. But if we don't, here's the two things. if you don't go to websites that, you know, have infectious places like porn and junk like that, and if you don't open emails that might have something in them, then you don't have to worry about viruses. It's really that simple. And I'm not like, you know, Mr. High and Mighty, oh, you're evil if you go to a porn site. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's the two most common places you're going to get a virus, either from opening an email that has it attached or from a porn site that has, you know, some kind of malicious ware on it.
Well, it's situational awareness, like I was talking about the other day with MK. You know, we were talking about carrying guns and stuff, but it goes the same on computers. If I see people that, well, I guess they're probably not tech savvy. A lot of them are my clients and even some of my friends. They have smartphones and they have laptops and they just surf and click and, you know, get this free app or get this free whatever. And then they complain when their smartphone or their laptop is just polluted with ads. It might not even be viruses. It probably is in a lot of cases. But, and, you know, they complain and it's like, well, you know, first off, whenever something is offered for free, it's never free. Right. There is a price. And a lot of this stuff is driven by market forces, you know, advertising and everything. So that's the price you pay. And, you know, so, like you said, some of these sites, they're just nesting grounds for malware and viruses. And if you're not, you know, if you're not aware, then you're going to get hit. And like you said about the antivirus, I think a big problem that the companies make, they make two problems. One, they make it damn near impossible to remove their software from your computer.
Yep.
And two, you have to go through all these hoops and loops to get their software working and validated and get your updated definitions. I think that's why you see a lot of pirated antivirus software on various sites. And not that I would know anything about that, but I have friends that have run an old antivirus program on their computers for 4 years and never had a problem. And it was, you know, a couple of steps to enable the, what do they call it, the crack or whatever, to get it running for free. And yeah, and so I think if the antivirus companies made their software a little more accessible and made it so that if you weren't satisfied and you could remove it a little easier, they might get a little more business, you know, instead of people turning to the piracy sites to get it.
Did you happen to see the interview that Jeff Berwick did with John McAfee?
I didn't.
That is worth watching. That guy is a fascinating individual. He wrote the initial McAfee, however you pronounce it, McAfee. There we go. He wrote the initial McAfee antivirusware and then sold the company and sold his product with it. And then the company.
Yeah, I was
going
to say he has nothing to do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, Norton was the same way back in, geez, I think it was 98. Norton was really solid as far as antivirus goes. Mm. And then they sold it to like Roxio or I can't remember, some company. And now it is, well, I don't have a high opinion of it. I don't think it suits my needs, let's put it that way. And it's very hard to control and remove if you need be. So yeah. They need to improve. They need to make it more user-friendly and more accessible.
We're going to go away to the market, but we're going to be right back.
Well, hour number two on the Freedom Geeks Radio and Podcast Extravaganza.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Two of the Freedom Fiends. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BitCotNoGov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bipcot.org. That's BIPCOT.org. Hey, Chandler, how you doing today? Oh, I forgot to introduce myself. Great. I'm Ben Stone, and with me is Chandler St. Pierre. Hey, Chandler, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ben.
We're anything
it's good
but
to talk to you again.
Yeah, it is good to talk to you.
No, we're doing fine. We're on the radio.
Well, that's true. Yeah. You know, and we should give... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's funny. Whenever I hear the BIPCOT promo, I just think of Nelson on The Simpsons. Ha ha. Just want to laugh at the government. Ha ha.
You know, we should give our listeners a little bit of a background. You and I have been podcasting for a long time separately, and we've done several podcasts together, guesting on each other's podcasts over the years. And we kind of, you know, slowly migrated as Michael picked us up over here and brought us into Freedom Fiends. That's how we came on the air on actual radio instead of just hiding in the recesses of the internet on podcasts. What was your, can you say the name of your early podcasts?
Oh, there were so many. Let me think. What was the first one? The first one we did was Brush Fires of the Mind, and then we did a now defunct. We're going to try to restart it, maybe under a new brand and a new website, but we did a podcast called The FU Express. And the title choice was not mine. It's snarky and everything. And, you know, I suppose it serves its purposes. I would have chose something a little different, but, you know, whatever. But, yeah, Michael dragged us into professionalism, kicking and screaming. It's it's a different world when you have to be the no vulgarity and the being mindful of what you speak was not a big deal for me. That came pretty easily because on my podcast, I tended to be I don't want to say professional, but the more low key person. Mm-hmm. My other co-host, who is a riot, he was just like all the time, and so that wasn't a big deal. But the show prep and not just flying by the seat of your pants and following a show clock and having a specific format, that took me quite a while to learn. That and audio, you know, sound conditioning and making sure that you sound really well. And, you know, I really got to thank Michael because he's taught me a lot about how to go about it and sound really good and sound really professional so that people want to listen to you.
Yeah, and speaking of sounding good and sounding professional, like we were talking about in the last hour, I'm in a motorhome traveling around the country, and so as I just now heard in the background, it's starting to rain where I'm at in Alabama. And
that what that is?
Yeah, being in a motorhome when it's raining is kind of like being in a metal shed while someone's dumping ball bearings on it. So if we get some really, you know, nasty sounds, and thunder also can be quite fun in a motorhome when you hear lightning and thunder cracking around. But hopefully it won't interrupt the show here, but we'll do the best we can.
Well, we may hear my kitty purring. He's climbed back into my lap. He's bound and determined, and he's like right underneath my microphone. So he's just kind of hovering there, not sure if he should. He's like, should I be here? I know he doesn't really want me to, but I'm going to sit here anyway.
So one of the things that we were going to try to touch on in this hour is was elections, and maybe talk about how much fun it is to troll constitutionalists on the internet, or maybe, you know, yeah, no, it's fun. It's kind of fun. It can be frustrating if you don't have the right attitude. But if you have the right attitude, you know, here's something, we talked about this before we started the show, and I wasn't really sure if I was going to say it on the radio or not, because it's kind of, it can be a little hurtful, but it's really the truth. When you're talking to constitutionalists, or small government people, you know, conservatives, many Republicans, a lot of people like that. One of the nice things about talking to them is that typically you're talking to someone who thinks like an adult. And that really gives you an advantage, because then you're able to go and talk about them about principles, about things that they believe in. You can, it's not that hard to get them to tell you what they believe in. And then all you have to do is just show them that government, by its very definition, is the opposite of the things they think are good. And you win. You know, it's that easy. As long as the person doesn't go into anger, as long as you can keep them, you know, on a positive note, you can make a lot of headroom talking to a constitutionalist. Because first off, a lot of what they believe is based on history that's not true, and it's really easy to disprove the history that they believe about the founding fathers and, you know, the myths of the government obeying all the rules until the, you know, until the last 20 years or whatever. If you go through and you start working with them, typically conservatives will have a little bit of a like towards history anyway, and that may be what pushed them towards being conservatives. So it's really not that hard to walk them in that direction and get them thinking that, you know, if they already think government, small government is better than big government, if you've already won that aspect of the thought train, then you've already got them going in the right direction. Is that kind of what you've found?
Yeah, I can speak from personal experience, because I'm a recovering conservative and, you know, recovering statist. By the way, I love the series of podcasts you and Michael did on recovering from statism. They are excellent.
Thank you.
And I still do. I have a love of history, and I've found your Bad Quaker podcasts to be an invaluable source of learning about the revisionist history that is propagandized to us. There's a lot of things I didn't realize even after I came to Liberty. And, you know, I listened to your podcast and I was like, wow, really? And, you know, get on Google and start looking around going, no kidding. You know, why don't they teach us that sort of thing? And we know the answer, because it serves their ends propaganda-wise.
Yeah. Yep.
But I think that's... So yeah, you are right. It is much easier to steer them. They may get a little offended when you question their heroes and their glorified version of history. I have seen conservatives get a little offended and maybe just be like, well, I think we'll agree to disagree. Whereas with liberals, and you know, I don't want to sound like I'm collectivizing, but hey, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to liberals, it's like talking to a child. They don't work from first principles. They work from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you have to be a cold, you know, cold-hearted robot, but you can't base everything from emotion. And they do, and they just get, many of them will get very, very upset. And the vitriol that spews from them, well, you're just an idiot, and you know, that's radio friendly. Some of the things I've been called on, there's a Facebook page called Being Liberal, and every once in a while I go and troll them. You know, somebody, one of my friends subscribes to the page and he'll repost something, and I can't help but just respond, because it's utter nonsense. You know, like, they worship FDR and that sort of thing. And I think that's the profile picture on that page, is FDR, a horrible, horrible human being.
Oh, he was.
And you know, I'll go, and I have learned that I can't react like them. I can't be the child. I can't be name calling. You're a bunch of dumb liberals. You know, I can't be like Rush Limbaugh or something. And I try to cite fact and sound calm and coherent, and they just can't deal with it. I mean, in fact, I've gotten banned from that page. So, you know, and it happens. You know, the liberal mindset is a very childish one, and it's very much based on emotion, and they just can't handle facts, and they just, you know, spew out the hatred towards you. Well, you just hate, you know, X, Y, or Z, whatever it is, women, children, gays. You know, freedom, like, who knows?
And you know, and some of those arguments they make are so utterly ridiculous that you think, how can you even make that argument to me? You know, like for instance, a liberal accusing us of being anti-gay. Now, I'm not gay, but I don't have anything against anybody that is. They're not bothering me. Why do I care what they do, you know? But they'll take that position. They'll try to they'll grab a straw man argument and try to beat you up with it. And I think a lot of the reason this is maybe true. Well, I think it's true with some conservatives too. I guess it's kind of a human nature. But when you're in these conversations, they will hear not what you're saying, but they will hear what they expect you to say. They'll hear what yep. they expect to hear. And not necessarily what you're saying. So they'll read into anything that you say. They'll read into it what they want to hear from it.
Well, they're running from a pre-planned playbook.
Yeah.
And when you deviate from that, it's just so frustrating. As a side note, I know quite a few of my liberal friends, they're not good chess players, just saying. Because they can't think ahead, you know. You have that playbook, and you stick to those talking points.
That's
and it's not
an
to say that
thing.
People of all political persuasions don't. I mean, even libertarians and anarchists have their certain talking points. The non-aggression principle. And, you know, they can't think outside of that, or conservatives with their, you know, government is oppression and we need small government. But you have to be able to adapt and look at facts objectively, because a lot of times those facts will contradict some of your deeply held beliefs. And if you aren't willing to look at them objectively and question them, you're not really going to grow.
You know, I think my daughter, Kai, I think my daughter, you dropped a guitar.
Yep, I did.
I think my daughter, Kai, taught me a lot about a lot of things, actually. But she taught me a lot about how to be patient and talk to somebody by using the Socratic method, by asking them questions that cause them to think about things.
The Socratic method. That sounds way too complicated. Wasn't it that Socrates guy from way back in the olden days?
We'll be right back after going to the free market.
Free market of ideas.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Hey, we're too busy to do a talk radio show. We're too busy talking to do a talk radio show.
Busy talking to do a talk radio. That's pretty good.
Well, Ben's given me some sound conditioning advice, because, you know, this is a brilliant guy, and you know, he's given me advice on how to, like, not worry about bumping my mic stand. I mean, dropping my guitar.
Yeah. So I guess I should go ahead and say that. So I'll give the audience an idea of what we're talking about during the break. Being in the RV world, one of the real popular things that RVers have learned how to adapt and use for a million different things are noodles. These are these floaty things, these colorful foam floaty things that are like a long tube of, of foam. And they're hollow in the middle. And you can slice them down one side the long way. And then you can kind of like slightly open that thing up and pad pointy, sharp corners, like on the pop-outs of motorhomes and places where a low head room might be, where a person might bump their head. They can put those things on there. And so RVers use these things on everything that they can. And I figured out that I could use them on my mic arm. The mic arm has springs on it that these are the adjustable mic arms that are flexible.
The scissor arms.
Yeah, that's what it's called. And they've got springs on them to hold them in place, where you can then grab the mic and move it all around and it'll stay wherever you put it. But those springs are really noisy, and if you touch the mic arm or touch anything, you'll get this boing sound.
Like such.
Yeah.
See? And that was just a light touch.
And so what I found was I take noodles and cut them to length, and put them right over the whole mic arm, including the springs. And so they don't interfere with the functioning of those springs, but they deaden them so that there's no sound coming out of them. So I can bump my mic thusly, and you can't hear it because it's deadened.
That is brilliant. And you know what? I have some pipe insulators, which are basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And I have a couple extra ones left over from this winter downstairs. So when we're done, I'm going to go get those and cut them and put them on my mic stand so I don't have to worry about that.
Well, because
this is a teaching hospital.
That's the other half of this tip. Rather than paying the crazy price for the floaty noodles that all the other RVers pay, I go to Home Depot or wherever and get those pipe insulators. Now, the trick is I have to get them when we're up north in Ohio or somewhere in the north, because you get down here in the southern states, in like southern part of Alabama and northern Florida and Mississippi and stuff, and you go into a Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever, and you ask them for, you know, pipe insulation, or you ask them for the little, you know, the strips, the heat strips that you wrap around.
Yep. What, heat
those,
tape.
Yeah, heat tape. Those are really handy to have with an RV, so that you can, you know, so that you don't have to pump out all the water out of all the lines. You can just plug those in and wrap the pipes with them and keep them from freezing. But you get down here,
and they must look at you funny.
Yeah, in the deep south, they're like, what is this? What do you want? Why would you insulate a pipe? Electric tape? I don't understand. Because it never freezes. So, you know, I understand. I'm sure there's products in the south that people in the north would look at and go, why would you want that?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny that the whole south thing got me thinking. I was looking on Facebook yesterday, and somebody posted, and it was really funny the way my timeline was set up. I had just logged in, and one of my friends had posted, there's a new lizard. It looks kind of like a Komodo dragon, and it's huge. And I guess it's been prowling around Florida eating cats.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh, no. And then right under it, another one of my friends had posted this article on how you can now buy plate armor for your cats, you know, and make them look like a knight. So, you know, I got on my friend that posted about the dragon. I was like, time to suit up the kitties, you know, down in Florida. We got to get them some plate armor. And there's this really cute picture of this cat with some plate armor. So, yeah, I mean, I lived down in Florida for a year, and it wasn't my cup of tea. But there are definitely, it's a totally different culture and a totally different lifestyle, you know, north to south.
You know, in the south, they have armadillos, which are the weirdest little animal ever. At first, you only see them dead on the highways because they're nocturnal and they're very shy and you just don't see them that much. But what they kind of look like, if you've never seen one, they kind of look like a possum in plate armor. That's what reminded me of that when you were saying the cats in armor. And I always make the joke that a possum is like the hillbilly version. You might imagine him with a corncob pipe and a funny hat. But an armadillo is like his rich cousin that can afford plate armor.
That's awesome. So true. I want to go get me some plate armor now.
Yeah.
I never understood how people walked around in that stuff. It's got to be hard.
So we're going to go to the break again. We're going to be right back with more Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been using Block It Pocket, and I love it. Block It Pocket protects your cell phone, tablet, or laptop from remote tracking and data theft. I've tested it. It works. Put your cell phone inside, call from another phone, and the phone in the Block It Pocket won't ring because all signals in and out are blocked. Avoid calls and texts at the wrong moment. Keep your location private. Protect passports and credit cards. Water-resistant, hand-washable, and stylish in many designs. Go to blockitpocket.com. That's blockitpocket.com.
Randy has a cool sound effect.
Yeah. That scary cat.
Yeah. I can't remember what it's called.
Wampus cat.
That's it. Yeah. Randy's a pretty cool guy anyway. I got to meet him when we were going through Missouri, and he and I went to lunch, and we got to sit down and spend a couple hours just chatting. He is a really interesting person.
Yeah, I got to actually chat with him. Well, I did a show with him for the first time last week, and we talked a couple of days prior for about an hour, and it was really cool. I'm excited to meet him at Porkfest, the Porcupine Freedom Festival this summer. I think that should be cool.
Yeah, I'd like to get up there, but it's just there's just no way we can do it this year.
But I'm going to have to beg, borrow, and steal. Like, I got the ticket, but getting the time off and the gas money and the supplies, and it's only one state over, but it is tough, you know, to make that time and to get the money to go and do that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I was going to, in the last, in the set two sections ago, I guess, I was going to talk about elections. The thing of it is, with Freedom Fiends, you know, the theme of our show is talking is kind of like if Libertarian Paradise, if LibPair was already here, if we were already living in that, doing the show that would be for that. It's not, it's not our goal of the show is not to just cry about how bad the government is constantly and just go into every news, story that's out and worry about what's happening with Israel and what's happening with Iran and, you know, what's happening with the elections. And that's not what the Freedom Fiends is about. The Freedom Fiends radio show Yeah, really. The Freedom Fiends radio show today is the echo of what Michael and Nima first started. And if you go back and listen to those old shows, it was really a conversation between two friends. And that's what the whole show was. If you listen to those old shows, you can tell that Michael and Nima were really good friends and they were just having a chat. And I think that was the beauty of those shows.
I do too. I used to be a talk radio junkie, and like from morning till night, and I can't stand listening to it now. It's boring and it's depressing. Much rather, like you said, listen to two friends, even if they're liberal and they're talking about things that I could not agree with. I would rather listen to that than the whole, it's the end of the world and the president's bad and Congress is bad and they're doing this. It's like, yes, we know. If you're going to talk about it, laugh at it. Make fun of it.
Yeah. And that's what gets me with elections. I hate election season. Every time it rolls around, I just hate it. You know, all the silly signs and the goofy ads on TV that you can just, they just drip of lies. And it's just it's such a downer, you know?
It is.
I just dread it every time around. And here's the other thing that gets me is really good people who go day after day after day, clear thinking and, you know, solid in like 99% of their life. And then it becomes election season and somehow their minds turn off and they think that all the things that they are irritated by in government are all going to just go away after this election season because they're going to get their guy elected and he's different. He's not like those Washington insiders. He's fresh. He's new. And this is a shtick that the politicians know and they play on every 4 years. They know that there are large quantities of Americans who are tired of business as usual in Washington, D.C., and they want an underdog, they want an outsider to go in there and shake things up and change stuff. And finally, you know, they know this, so they create one of those every few years, and they run him. And in my lifetime, you know, I remember when Jimmy Carter was the outsider. He was the guy nobody ever heard of. He was the guy that was going to go to Washington and change all the corruption. He was going to fix everything. And then, all right, so he was an utter failure. So then we've got Ronald Reagan. How could you think Ronald Reagan was an outsider? And yet, that's how he was sold. He was not a member of the inner circle of the GOP. The GOP hates him, and they fought against him. And George Herbert Walker Bush said horrible things about him in the primary. And then he became the candidate. And out of nowhere, he was no longer the outsider. He was doing exactly the same as what they were all doing. And then after, you know, the old George Bush took his turn and failed, And then, okay, so now here's our savior coming in. It's a guy nobody's ever heard of named Bill Clinton, and he's different than anybody else, and he's young, and he's, you know, he's liberal, and we're so used to all these conservatives, and this young guy with this brilliant wife, and they're going to sweep into the office, and they're going to change everything. And you know what? He was exactly like Bush. There was no difference. It was just a different shtick, and people bought it. And then, go ahead. I rambled long enough.
I was just
going
to say that's some mad science right there. The pendulum of the rhetoric swings from one extreme to the next, but when you boil it down, like you said, there's no difference.
And even George W. Bush, the younger, I call him Baby Bush, because you know this is my little slap at the Bushes. There was this guy named Doc Duvalier, who was the dictator in Haiti, and he was just a deeply evil human being. And then once he died, his son took over, and they lovingly called him Baby Doc Duvalier. Not really; they were making fun of him, but. And I looked at the Bushes like that. You had like Papa Bush and you had Baby Bush. And one was deeply evil and the other was kind of an idiot. And that's exactly like the Duvalier family was. But even George Bush, when he first ran, you know, there was pictures of him with his cowboy hat and his cowboy boots. And he's like, I'm going to go to Washington and shake things up. I'm different. I'm an outsider. I'm from Texas. And he wasn't really from Texas. He was from Texas like I'm from Alabama, you know?
Right. He's from Connecticut.
Yeah. Kennebunkport. Of course, that's in Maine, I think, isn't it?
Oh, what a nightmare when those guys come up here. It's awful.
Anyway, you know, I don't know how I was going to go in that. But other than the fact to say that the outsider thing is a shtick, It's a performance act. It's a comedic routine. It's a gimmick. And those people in Washington know that the people in the United States will fall for it every 4 years because we have no memory out here in the heartland. You know, we don't remember that the same trick was pulled on us by the last dirty politician. And so we see the outsider.
Because we have more important things to worry about than, you know, the political contest, like making a living.
Yeah.
You know, and surviving and raising our families and maintaining our friendships. You know, I heard it really... Gerald Celente, who I like to listen to every once in a while on his YouTube, podcast or whatever he does, but he described politics as like professional wrestling. You know, they on the TV screens, they're like, I'm going to get you and you're such a bad guy and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, after the TV screens are shut off, they're backstage, you know, sharing a beer and slapping each other on the back, saying how they pulled the wool over everyone's eyes, you know, and they're good friends.
That's exactly it. And that's the thing. Once you understand that that is reality, it kind of changes your whole view on elections and voting and government. And all of a sudden, you don't see these people as saviors and as people who are going to change things and people who are going to finally speak for the little man. And all that, you realize that all of that is a con. It is strictly, at first they... And it actually is a con. It's a confidence game. First, they have to win your confidence. And, you know, once they get your confidence, then they get your donations. And then they get into office. They get your vote to get into office. And then there's a point in the con called the N and N. And when you hit to the N and N in a con, the con has worked. Now the only thing you need is to extract the scammers that pulled the con, get them out of the area before the victim of the con, the mark, before he figures it out and does something like shoot you or something like that. And that's the thing with elections. They get you on the in and in, and then they don't even have to leave. They know there's nothing you can do about it, and they're going to, you know, they're going to be in that office for whatever the term limit allows them, and the next one's going to come in and going to do the same con game, and it's repeated every single time, and we never catch on. The vast majority, collectively. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, and a big part of the con is when you said that they don't even have to leave once they get you invested, because. Even if you come to realize, and I've seen this with the Obama presidency and a lot of liberals out there, even when they come to realize that he's no different, You know, their guy is the same as, you know, the new boss is the same as the old boss.
Yeah.
They're so invested in it that they don't want to admit it, and they just keep going. You know, they'll follow him right off the edge of a cliff.
That's the monkey with the fruit. Do you know about the monkey with the fruit?
No, do tell.
Okay, so this happens. You do this in Africa. They have these termite mounds that are like 10, 15 feet, 18 feet tall that are made out of, that the termites have made as their termite mound. And then they go out from that and eat trees and bring the rubble back. And you can go to a termite mound and you take like a piece of fruit, like an orange or any kind of a piece of fruit like that. And you let them, you go to a place where you know that there's chimpanzees. And so you sit out there and you open up the fruit, like whatever it is, the orange or whatever, and you eat it. And you let them see you eating the fruit. And then you take one of the pieces of fruit, and in front of the chimpanzees where you know they can see it, you walk over to the termite mound and you cut a little hole just big enough to put the fruit inside the termite mound. Now, the termite mound is very strong because it's made of wood pulp, and so it takes a bit to cut a hole in the termite mound. But you cut a hole in the termite mound just big enough to put the fruit through the hole, and then you leave. And the chimp is driven crazy by two things, greed and curiosity. And so he eventually will go over there and stick his hand into the termite mound and grab the fruit. And when he does that, you have him, because he can't pull his hand out while he's still holding the fruit. He has to let go of the fruit to pull his hand out because the hole's not big enough. And he'll stand there yanking on that, not being able to get away. And you can walk right up to him with a bag, throw the bag over him, and then, you know, break his hand, break the termite mound around him and free his hand. And you've got him. He's captured. And he will stand there and yank on that fruit and not let go of it because his greed and his curiosity is so great that he will actually, you know, risk losing his life over that. And that's kind of the case with, you know, once a person has bought into a candidate, they're owned. The candidate owns them.
That reminds me of Homer Simpson going into the soda machine, grabbing the can, his hand getting stuck, and when the firemen get there, they're like, "Homer, are you still holding on to the can?" Dope.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Worms, worms. Freedom Beans on the radio.
Interrupting worm.
We have an interruption. We have a guest. Not really a guest.
You guys know that joke?
No.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Who's there?
Interrupting cow.
Interrupting cow.
Moo!
Davi Barker has joined us on the radio. Hey, Davi.
See, this
What's up, guys?
This is our redemption in the third act. We're just going to make jokes, man. Yeah. It works much better.
Yeah, that's better than talking about voting anyway. Oh, I should say this, though. Actual redemption in the third act. I was complaining about voting, so here's the solution to the whole voting problem. Don't vote. Don't give a politician one penny unless they steal it from you through taxation. Don't donate to any politician because they're all filthy animals that need to not have a that need to get a real job and not be begging off the government constantly.
So, I don't know about that. I saw a commercial for the restaurant Sizzler today that has me wanting to vote for Sizzler for president in 2016.
Well, they make a good steak, though. I don't think Harry Reid can make a good steak.
Yeah, I'm a buffet guy myself. I like the salad bar. But see, that's the point. It's the choice of America, right? You go into Sizzler, you have a choice. This commercial literally, like, it's from 1990, but it's on the internet right now for some reason. It looks like a campaign commercial. It's all about, we support family values as well as, you know, plowing the way forward. Like, it really looks like a campaign commercial.
You know, I almost made a horrible joke. You said Harry Reid doesn't make a good, can't make a good steak, and I started to say it's according to how you butcher him, bum, bum, bum. But that's probably it's all about the cut. It's how you cut the meat. That's what. So, but
nah, he's all thin and sinewy.
Well, that's probably too, and old. You know, old meat is never good.
He's tough.
Not to mention, he's not FDA approved. I mean, can you really trust that meat?
Oh, man. You know, there's a, I won't name brands because we might upset some advertiser somewhere, but there's a chicken manufacturer, or a chicken producer, or whatever they call themselves, of commercial chicken that makes the statement on their commercial, this is American chicken. It's not imported from China. And then they say, we make sure that we ask the FDA to assure that all of our chicken is American. And I'm like, aren't the FDA already inspecting all that chicken coming from China? Are you telling us that the chicken that the FDA says is okay from China is somehow different than the chicken that the FDA says is okay coming from you? I mean, you're trying to use the FDA to validate your product, and yet your other product is also validated by the FDA. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's not a logical argument.
Yeah, but see, Chinese chickens are coming here and taking good, hardworking American chickens' jobs. Yeah.
Well, if they have proper paperwork. Do they have their green cards? All you chickens, do you have your green cards? then it's okay. As long as the chickens doing the roofing jobs and mowing our lawns, if they have their green cards, then it's okay.
Chinese chickens are filling the sandwiches Americans won't fill.
Now that should be a campaign ad.
Stop Chinese chickens. Oh, man.
Those darn illegal immigrants.
You could have like an American chicken, you know, like carrying an American flag or something saying, I can't get a decent sandwich because Chinese chickens. Oh, that's terrible. We've really gone down a rat hole here.
I like it. It makes me laugh.
Davi, you and I need to do more shows together anyway. Well, that's true. Chandler too.
Yeah, for sure.
We should. No, well, you know, we need to get like three or four people and just do a wild show. Kind of like the one we tried to do at Porkfest, but a little more organized and perhaps sober.
Well, we do like a whole like New World Order WWF wrestling style like fiend shout off. Oh, we all come in with our wrestling names and we have like fake grudges and drama happens.
That would be spectacular.
Yeah,
I'd have to remember my wrestling name first.
Yeah, oh, you're I don't remember either.
I think it's on Fiend Phone somewhere. Let me look.
Well, there's our outgoing music, Davi.
The Coon Cat.
Yeah, there we go.
Chandler, thanks for doing a show with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, likewise, Ben. It was really good talking to you again.
Davi, thanks for ringing in.
Worms.
Cool, cool. Well, you guys have a good, safe evening. I think we'll talk again soon.
Very soon. We got to do this again.
Worms.
Worms. We didn't do a whole lot of negative stuff, though. I guess my rants about voting and about elections was pretty negative. We can say the cure to that is don't vote.
Yeah, don't fall for the con game.
You know?
Invest your time and energy in things that are important to you and to the people around you.
And money, too. Don't give money to a stinking politician. Oh, that is just such a waste of money. It's bad enough that we get taxed by these people, but to give them, to voluntarily say, oh, this guy's the answer, I'm going to send him money. Oh, no. Just recognize you're being conned and walk away from it. That's the redemption. That's what you do. And then you're free. And then, you know, whatever those people do, hey, it's their fault. I'm not a part of that. I didn't start that war. I didn't go over there. It's not we that did this. It's not we that did that. I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't vote for that clown. I didn't vote against that clown. I didn't give him any money other than what they forced from me, but gunpoint through taxation. Not my problem. Not my fault. Not my monkey.
Yeah, not my monkey, not my circus.
And, you know, a thing that a person can look up, and I'm not going to go into it, but it just popped into my head. There was a guy named Robert Nozak that just died a few years ago. I guess died about 10 or 15 years ago. Really cool. He wasn't right on everything. There's some stuff that Robert Novak didn't get right, but he was pretty solid. And he has this thing called the Tale of the Slave. And I would encourage anybody to Google Robert Nozak, Tale of the Slave. Robert Nozak, Nozick, Tale of the Slave. And that is a really good, I think Tom Woods or somebody did a YouTube video just reading it that's really good. But whether you're reading the Tale of the Slave or whether you're listening to an audio version of it or whatever, it's really good. We don't have time in the show today to go through it, but it essentially lays out the argument of when most people would agree that a person is a slave under certain circumstances. And then he goes through all the steps of modern government, of what government is, and then he says, at what point were you not a slave? And of course, the logical conclusion is, if there's a government present, you're still a slave. It's just a degree of how comfortable you are with that slavery. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out. That's a really good point. I think that, you know, your constitutionalists, minarchists, or whatever, or even your liberals, they talk about how are we going to stop this oppressive system.
Fiend phone.
Uh-huh.
And, we have...
Hey, Davi.
Who do we have on here?
Worms.
What's up, Davi?
How's it going, guys?
Welcome to the show. We only have like 2 minutes left, so tell our listeners out there in radio land what wonderful things are happening in the world of Davi.
Wow. Not a whole lot. I'm watching apocalypse movies lately, and they're a lot of fun.
And I saw your post on Facebook the other day.
I'm actually watching Fargo right now, which is really more of a train wreck than an apocalypse, but it's a good time. I'm sorry I had connection problems getting on the show today, or I would have been here sooner.
No problem.
That's all good. Yeah, we were just
talking about... What are you guys up to?
We were talking about the absurdity of voting and how it's just absurd and why people would even bother.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear us, Stubby?
What are you up to? Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about the absurdity of voting and why people even bother to participate in that nonsense.
Can you hear Chandler, Dovey?
Oh, you know what? I had Chandler turned down because I thought he was GCN. But there you go. What were you saying?
There we go.
So we're almost out of time.
Well, we can actually scrub this and re-record it if you want.
Yeah, actually we could. The mark is still set on that. So why don't we do that? Let me kill the recording.
Let's scrub it right.